It's just like in your dream. It'll take us to the other side of the zombie takeout.
What's up? Welcome to episode 123 of Zombie
Zombie
Takeout, the B Movie and Cult Movie Podcast. I'm Uncle John.
And I'm Scotto.
And no listener submitted this week, but I watched several movies over the break. Yeah, it turns out the week I don't have to watch a movie, I watched 10.
I so wanted to watch movies this week, too, and
I watched enough for both of us. most of them are in our wheelhouse. In fact, four are on the list. I'm just going to go to the two that aren't offhand. Iron Man 2. My top three of the Avengers movies, up there with Captain America and the Avengers. But of course, anybody who has any interest has already seen it. Also, Coriolanus. Yeah, Cornholio-anus, whatever.
Cornholio-anus.
You never thought of that one?
No, I never did. I just focused on the anus part. I didn't realize cornhole could, you know, yeah. I see what you did there. That's clever.
With the possible exception of Richard III, it may be the best Shakespeare movie I've seen.
Really?
The play, as I know we've discussed off air, I don't know if we've talked about it on air, not his best.
Right.
But the movie works beautifully. Beautifully shot, great action scenes, and the performances are completely natural. In fact, it barely even sounds Shakespearean at times.
Huh.
A bit, but you got Ralph Fiennes, Gerard Butler, James Nesbitt is in it. Brilliant cast.
Yeah, that is, you know, one thing to say about that.
If you like Shakespeare, please check it out. Even if you don't know you like Shakespeare and you just want a good war/political intrigue movie, see it anyway. Now on to the stuff that's on the list. There are four here. Two I added after watching them. Starting with Stuart Gordon, The Black Cat.
All right.
Poe's The Black Cat.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, it's by Stuart Gordon. It's basically a fictionalized, very fictionalized version of what led Poe to write the story, directed by Gordon, and Jeffrey Combs plays Poe.
Oh, my God.
And it is your typical mesmerizingly operatic performance from Combs.
All right, yeah, I'm sold. We're on that one.
Mutant Hunt, which was very 80s, very, very B.
I think that goes without saying that that's going to be on the list.
I wish we could misty it because there are moments, particularly in the beginning, that just scream for Devo references. And there are a couple of points, two particular points in the movie where characters dial phones that don't have keypads. Just saying. Yeah. Not good, but interesting. Bunraku, which is came out a year or two ago. It was the cowboy/samurai movie.
Okay.
Woody Harrelson's in it. Take your typical gunslinger movie and your typical samurai movie, and yes, I know that's redundant.
I was going to say, that's the same thing.
Combine them, give them an aesthetic that is equal parts Samurai Jack, Sin City, and a little bit of the Crazy 88 scene from Kill Bill. And Perlman plays the bad guy.
Of course.
It'll be very interesting to review. And as I mentioned on our Facebook page, Piranha 3DD, it completely lived up to everything I was hoping it would be.
It makes mountains out of molehills.
It was exactly what I wanted. I will say, though, for anybody who's going to watch it, Hasselhoff's line from the trailer, I'm not a lifeguard, never was, and this is just natural selection, that was edited together. About three quarters of the way in, when shit hits the fan, he delivers the lifeguard line, and the natural selection line is at the very end. Watch through the credits, because there are some outtakes and other bits at the beginning of them, and at the very end of that, there's this short little gag that ends with him saying the natural selection line. So when he gets to that, it goes to a black screen with credits. You can turn it off. But beautiful.
I hate that they do that with trailers.
Yeah.
Not even just trailers for movies, but trailers for TV shows. Yeah, when they're advertising what's coming up next week. I think it was NBC, from what I've seen. They'll show stuff that's not even coming up next
Yeah, it
week.
was pr outtakes probably, scenes that didn't end up in the actual episode.
They'll
Movies have
show
done that.
stuff from future episodes,
Oh, wow.
making you think that
It'll be
that's
next
coming up
week.
next
Yeah,
week
yeah.
when that's not really coming up.
And particularly because that line was really what sold me on the movie.
Of course.
And I can't even hold that against the movie because it was because the trailer lied. It wasn't a flaw with the movie. So
Right.
the movie was amazing. Now, finally, I revisited both the Airplanes movies and the Ghostbuster movies. And I
Really?
think I switched the tense on that. Airplane and Ghostbusters movies, both one and two of each. Airplane 1 completely holds up, still a masterpiece.
Yeah.
Airplane 2, I could say still holds up, still a cash grab piece of shit. I've never liked it. I was happy to. It
Shatner.
had, yeah, but I
And
was.
he sees the Enterprise in the periscope.
Yeah, I don't know.
And one of my favorite sight gags of all time is where they show the moonscape and you hear the wolf howling.
I was, after doing a bit of research, very happy to find out that Zucker Abrams had nothing to do with it.
Oh, really?
No credits whatsoever on it, so
Huh.
they just wanted more money. But Airplane One, there, I don't know how many times I've seen it. It's been a while, but there were a couple of things I never noticed before.
Really?
Captain Over, when he's at the newsstand,
Yeah.
the magazine he's reading, Modern Sperm. Never caught that.
Think I've ever caught that either.
And there's another scene in the cockpit when Ted's, landing the plane, flying the plane, and
Yeah.
he's getting the instructions. Somehow, for some reason, a bird appears on his shoulder.
Think I remember that.
Never caught it before.
I think I. Yeah.
Now, Ghostbusters was interesting. Still lives up, not as much as I would think, or as I was expecting. Still
Really?
good. But the acting, particularly for the main three, Harold Ramis, Dan Aykroyd, and Bill Murray, very sketch.
Of
And I mean
course.
sketch style acting,
Yeah.
which really just doesn't work anymore.
I don't know how many times you said on this that, Aykroyd's just not a good actor.
Yeah, in hindsight. But Murray was the worst of the offenders.
Yeah.
He should have been looking in the camera on just about every line.
Right. I think that's what people liked about him, though, is that he really did not give a shit.
It just it doesn't hold up, especially in light of Evolution, which we agreed is effectively Ghostbusters 3.
Right.
And the performances there are far more naturalistic movie style performances. And arguably some of the gags aren't as good, but the performances overall much better than in the original. But they still hold up. They're still great movies. Two was better than I remembered because I remember not liking it as much back then.
Yeah.
Overall, I think it's just as good.
Hasty pick, bonehead.
The plot is a lot more complicated. Some of the gags don't work quite as well, but
Yeah.
overall, they're both. I'd say, if I was gonna rate them, I'd give them both fours.
Really?
Yeah. All right. So on to some news. First story: Gary Oldman cast in the RoboCop remake.
All right, now we're talking.
Hollywood Reporter has learned that Gary Oldman is the second star to be cast in the upcoming remake of RoboCop. It was previously announced that Joel Kinnaman will be playing the title role, originated by Peter Weller. Oldman has been cast as Norton, the scientist responsible for RoboCop's construction, who finds himself torn between the ideals of the machine trying to rediscover its humanity and the callous needs of a corporation. The plot of the film, of course, follows a policeman who's brutally murdered and then brought back as a cyborg. Jose Padilla, I'm guessing on that pronunciation, is
Yeah.
helming the film, which doesn't currently have a start date for production, but is hoping to have a finished product by summer 2013. So, no start date, but they're hoping to be out in a year. Interesting.
Yeah.
I really had no interest in this until I read this.
Well,
And
of
no interest in the
course.
movie. I'll see anything with Oldman in it.
Right.
I really didn't have high hopes for the movie, but this is starting to look good. Next story. By the way, both of these from Cinemablend. Simon Pegg and Edgar Wright reveal new details about The World's End. Speaking to Empire, Pegg and Wright teased a few more details about the film, explaining that the pub crawl will include 12 bars, which is a
With the ice cream,
seriously
of course.
ambitious outing by just about any pub crawl standard,
Right.
and will conclude at a bar called The World's End. We knew that much.
Yeah.
Along the way, the friends will not only confront the failings of their own relationships, but will also face a mysterious and potentially world-ending threat. We knew that. As to what the threat may be, Peg and Wright won't say, instead focusing on how The World's End will be more mature than their past collaborations.
Oh, I don't know if I like the sound of that.
But won't lose sight of the team's signature silliness.
Okay.
This is as much about where you grew up as the people you grew up with, Wright explains. I would say that it's darker, more personal, and more silly. So actually, I'm hopeful about that, because
All
it's
right.
basically going to be more intense on all cylinders, in all respects. Now this is where it gets interesting. However, it's possible that the duo's revelation about the World's End genre could provide some new insight into the film's unknown disaster. Wright calls the feature a sci-fi comedy, but with a social sci-fi leaning in the vein of John Christopher and John Wyndham.
Huh.
Social science fiction applies less to tales of incredible technology and space-centric shenanigans and focuses on speculative stories of society and often its failings, like Fahrenheit 451 and Children of Men. The reference to Christopher could mean a virus-sparked disaster, as that is the source of the trouble in his popular novel Death of Grass, or perhaps a bioengineered experiment gone awry, like in Wyndham's Day of the Trifids. So you would assume aliens.
Yeah.
You were right about the sci-fi angle. I don't think they would be saying social sci-fi if it was aliens, though.
Yeah.
So this is going to be interesting. We know it's not going to be zombies.
Right.
Probably not aliens. So, really curious to see what it's going to be now. And
I'm
I like that they're going more personal and a bit more mature with it, because I think that's what pushed Hot Fuzz for me, that made it better than Shaun of the Dead. It was because the relationships were actually worked on, and it was a good film aside from the gags.
True,
You know,
true.
Shaun was pretty much just the gags, which were great, but it didn't quite fire on all of those other cylinders. Hot Fuzz did a lot more.
Yeah.
And it looks like they're going even further in that direction with World's End, so really looking forward to it. Even more than I already was, which was a lot. All right, so on to this week's movie, which is from 1988, The Navigator, A Medieval Odyssey. And that, of course, takes us to the impromptu plot summary, sponsored by the Earth's Core. It's really hot down there.
Now this is like I was saying before the recording that this is one of the strangest, probably I would say the strangest experiences
Yes.
I've had doing this. Not that it's the strangest movie,
No.
but that just that
Hard to review.
yes, this is going to be very hard to review. I do think since we did not discuss this off air, but just going into the impromptu plot summary that we should not reveal the final twist of the movie.
Oh, that's going to be tough.
Because
Okay.
I don't know about you, I probably maybe I should have seen it coming, but I didn't.
Right.
Anyway, we have a small medieval village. They're miners. They're looking for copper, of course, and there's a small boy who seems to have a sort of a second sight. He can see where the vein of copper is going to be. He can, they utilize him. And I guess that's the one question I was left with after this was, what do they mean by navigator?
Yeah, that was the part that I didn't quite get, maybe because he leads them there.
Right. That's the only thing you could assume is that they're talking about him being a navigator, through time, really, because he can see into the future. And somehow he leads them into the future. Not just a day ahead, but he somehow leads them
It was, I think,
hundreds of years
I
ago.
actually calculated it, 640.
Really?
Because it
Okay.
says 1348 at the beginning.
Okay, you know what? All right. So yeah, he so I mean it's pretty much Dark Ages, right?
Yeah. Black Plague.
Yeah. So right, that his brother comes before he leads them on this odyssey. The his brother returns from some sort of adventure. They're not really specific what the hell the brother does, but he just disappears for times on end, and he returns. And of course, the brother is very happy to see him, and you know they make promises him never to go away and stuff. So you're like, oh wow, they're really leading up for him to buy it. But he then reveals, of course, what's going on in the outside world and the horrors of the plague. And how it's going to pretty much come to get them all, and they decide the only way to ha avoid this is to make an offering to God. Now, why they needed to go into this tunnel to make this offering to God?
Because the kid had visions.
Because the kid had a vision of them doing it, and really, someone re should have just said,
Yeah.
"Why does God need a starship?"
Well,
Anyway.
that's explained why, effectively, why they followed him is explained. I don't know how much we want to talk about it since we don't want to give away the ending.
They,
Connor saw it as his only hope.
yeah,
I'll just put it that way. The older brother.
yeah, yeah,
And he
and
kind of convinced everybody else to go along.
he felt that the plague was just going to come and wipe them all out, and yeah, the only way to get around this was for them to go on this crazy journey that he'd seen them go on, and lifting this cross on this really high, the highest steeple in Christendom, at least to them. And of course, that church happens to be in 1988.
Yes. So they go straight through the earth and travel 640 years, hence our sponsor this week.
Right. So that's the deal. They go from Scotland to New Zealand through the earth. Is that really?
Oh, yeah, actually Northern England, Cumbria, but effectively
Okay.
Scotland.
Yeah.
Straight through the earth and 640 years into the future, and quite a bit southwest or east.
Right. So there's a lot that happens in this where you're just like, "What?" But you can tell they really weren't all that concerned
No,
about
no, no.
linear thought and science and logic. I mean,
I never inject these into the plot summary, but I got a bit of trivia. New Zealand film critic Russell Campbell argued that the film was part of the surrealist tradition. In particular, it rejected the rationalism which resulted in nuclear weapons.
well, right, because they're crossing what's essentially a river, and there's a nuclear submarine in the damn
Yes.
river.
A little on the nose.
And that's my notes. I get the fantasy aspect of this, but that vessel in this body of water, come on.
Yeah, true, true. Let's wrap up the summary before we really
Right,
get into
so
the review.
they arrive in the future, and the first item of business, getting across the highway. Now, when we were kids and we had watched this, we had bailed on it right there, pretty
Oh, that was the
much.
scene that turned you off?
That's where we bailed.
Okay, I was
We
wondering what did it.
made it through that whole first half hour, which is
That was
quite
the chore.
was quite clumsy,
Yeah.
and the last straw was,
Okay.
I totally saw why we bailed on watching that first half hour, and then just the last straw was them trying to cross the highway because it was just so annoying. But then, of course, seeing it now, it's
Yeah.
like we bailed on it too soon.
Yeah.
It gets interesting after this, and I mean, for in our heads, we had thought that for some reason we had in our heads that them crossing the highway was a good half hour of the movie or 20 minutes, and really, I timed it at only about six. But I guess it was just that they cross, and then there's a dude left behind, and then they're like, "Oh, how do we get to do this?" And we're like, "Oh my God, enough of this!" And then we bailed. It's one of the few movies we actually just were like,
Yeah,
"Bail."
I was wondering which scene it was that turned you off, but I was wrong.
Why? Where'd you think we?
When they come back.
Oh.
The part that kind of bugged me, but we'll get to that,
Well,
wrap up the summary.
yeah. I was bugged by that at first too, but then to see where it was going after that was like, whoa. All right. So yeah, the first item of business is to cross the highway, and then there's a lot of stuff that happens that really doesn't make sense after this. Like why they split up? Why? I mean, they're all there to put a cross on. They're all there to do the one job, and yet they split up for some reason.
Well, the one guy gets left behind at the road.
Well, right, that you understand. Well,
Connor goes off for reasons that are explained later. And the rest of them kind of stick together.
yeah.
So.
Kind of. One still stays with the steel workers,
Oh,
and
that's right.
none of that makes any sense whatsoever.
The one staying with the steelworkers, yeah, that was a little odd.
Right. None of that makes any sense at all. So yeah, he has these Connor has this horrible vision of someone dying though
Oh,
while
Griffin is the kid. Connor is the brother,
You're right,
older
you're right.
brother.
Griffin, sorry. Griffin has a vision of someone dying, and it keeps happening over and over to him, and he's not sure who it is that dies, and the hilarity ensues.
Now, first thing that caught me about this, and because I hadn't read, I actually didn't read too much of the plot summary before going in, which I usually do,
Yeah.
because after your description and hearing so many people on reading so many people on IMDb talking about how amazing the film is, I really wanted to go for the ride this time.
Right.
So the accents seemed a bit odd. They seemed like Scottish accents.
Well,
And
yeah.
I thought it was set in New Zealand for the whole thing, and then I can find out it's Cumbria, which again, odd that they'd change locations going through the earth.
But that's the thing. Nobody would be in New Zealand in 1300.
This is true. The Aborigines would be there. Good
Right.
point.
Well, yes. Okay. I mean, no white people
Well,
would be in New
actually,
Zealand.
that's Australia. I'm not sure if the Aborigines were in New Zealand as well.
Maoris would be in New Zealand.
Maoris, that's it.
Yeah.
One thing I did like was how they used color versus black and white. The visions are in color, and then you go to black and white for the medieval stuff,
Right.
and then they come into modern times, and you're in color again. A very effective way to separate which is which.
It's the Wizard of Oz.
Oh yeah, I forgot. I haven't seen that in ages. You're right.
The medieval stuff was Kansas.
Yeah, you're right. You're right.
And it's just
It's been too long since I've seen Wizard of Oz. I forgot.
I mean, me neither. And of course, the last time I saw it, Dark Side of the Moon was playing, but that's besides the point. They didn't buy, and they didn't really have a good, money shot, so to speak. See what I did there? Because and when you're playing Dark Side of the Moon, the song "Money" comes on. That's when it goes to color. They really could
It
have.
didn't really, you didn't notice it becoming color, yeah.
They really could have had a nicer transition into it.
Because you really notice the black and white.
Yeah.
Because it starts with the vision and it's in color and there's this torch that's going down this ravine.
Which is, of course, to let you know that this isn't going to be entirely in black and white, because it would probably have turned a lot of audiences
Yes.
off.
And then it goes to black and white, and it really is striking when it goes to black and white.
Yeah.
But
Yeah, it
then
is.
you're right, when they emerge from the it's a night scene when they emerge from the tunnel, and you don't really notice that it's in color.
Then
Actually,
all you could
the
think
whole
of
thing's
is
a night
the
scene.
dum dum da dum dum
Ha.
dum dum.
One thing their movie kind of reminded me of for some odd reason was, or actually two things, Time Bandits and Eric the Viking. It had a bit of a Gilliam feel.
It did borrow a lot from that. I think I was just thinking Wizard of Oz all the way through it. This is one of the weirdest build-ups, because we've done so many movies that's had to live up to a good reputation. I really think this is the first one we've ever done that has to live up to a bad one.
Yeah, because even though, like I said, there are a lot of people who love the movie. In fact, it
Right.
won several awards.
Right.
The Australian Film Institute Best Film, several other film festivals.
Well,
It
it
was
competed at Cannes.
chosen for competition at the 88 Cannes Film Festival.
Right.
And it got a 5-minute standing ovation. So a lot of people love this movie. But the first thing I'd ever heard about it actually is a song by Arion. A prog rock project, I'll call it. It's basically one guy who plays all the instruments and brings in a bunch of soloists. They recorded a song about based on the movie. That's the first I'd ever heard, even heard of it. And then it came up on the list. You talked about it, and it basically just said it was horrible.
Oh yeah, I think
So,
I put it on the list because
yeah,
it was just we were looking for shit movies to do,
right.
and I was gonna put this in a shit trilogy actually.
And so I really didn't know what to think about it going in because I'd heard both extremes, which is why I didn't really read the plot summary too much because I wanted to be surprised.
Yeah.
But it had a very Gilliam feel. Now, back to the beginning. That whole opening, that's the part that I'm surprised you was all you watched the first time, because that is the real
Yes.
chore.
Well, right. That's why we thought it was one of the worst movies ever we've ever rented.
The acting wasn't exactly bad. It certainly wasn't Wiseau, but it wasn't good
It was
either.
very presentational.
Yes.
I think he was embracing the black and white too much and the old film style too much, where, everything was, when people spoke, they had to be framed perfectly, the film talking into the camera pretty much. And after a while, that gets annoying.
And the but lack the lack of a budget really showed.
Yeah.
Particularly the scene where they're battling the ship. A ship about to come ashore with basically some plague victims. And they're trying to get rid of it. It pretty much looked like LARPing.
Or it looked like the Zatoichi extras.
Yeah, or that. Yeah, that's another thing that occurred to me.
Like they fire arrows. They just kind of fire them to burn the sail. It's like, well, how are they supposed to sail away if you're burning the sail, dummy?
Yeah.
If you want them to leave, don't prevent them from leaving.
And this isn't one that I'm going to nitpick because it is pretty much straight up fantasy. There isn't a lot to nitpick in that sense.
Once you
But
see the medieval angel of death, like flying across the moon, that's pretty much the cue of just let it go.
it's like nitpicking a Gilliam film. You just there's why. However, a few things. Off the top, they had a metal tunneling machine. It was basically a pulley powered thing that punched through the earth, but it
Right.
was clearly made from a girder.
Right.
Medieval peasants. If it was, I think it was supposed to be wood, but still, why would they have this complex tunneling machine when they've never done anything like this before? Although that gets to one of my issue. I don't know if it would be an issue with the movie or just one of my points of confusion. You're never really sure past a certain point what's real and what isn't.
Yeah, I kept thinking of Dune. Because I've been reading, I just finished the second book and I'm kind of waiting for my library to get me the third. But in the second one, where he's seen the vision so many times, when it finally happens, he's not sure if it's actually happening or if it's just the vision anymore. That just. I mean, it's an interesting point if you're thinking about it. If you can see into the future and you keep seeing the same thing happening over and over again before it happens, you get desensitized to it. And then when it actually happens, you're just like, yeah, whatever.
So I kind of chalked the metal tunneling machine up to this is the vision, this is fantasy now, or I mean fantasy from their perspective. It's not really happening in the movie, because I think. Well, do we want to
Was the
say?
machine not there when they came back?
Well, when they came, well, we'll get to when they came back. But I don't
I
want to
mean,
skip over everything in present day, but.
we don't need to be linear about this.
Well, yeah, true. I don't think it was there, but you
Exact that.
don't really see them come back per se.
Right. They're back in the cave. It's in black and white
Yeah.
again.
Well, they tease that one of the characters is going to die,
Yeah.
and then they basically telegraph that another character is going to die.
Yeah.
And when that character is about to die, they're suddenly back in the tunnel.
Yeah.
And they're acting as if it was all just a dream.
Yeah, and I was just like, you've got to be fucking kidding me.
That's the point that turned me off a bit.
There's
And
no way we were 16 when we saw this.
yeah.
This like just came to video in 89, I'm
Haha.
thinking. Probably that summer. Or maybe later 88, who knows? There's no way we were making it that long into this.
But that was the point where I really, because I was in up until then. I actually, and getting to the part we skipped over, the modern day stuff, that was what sold me, because that beginning was a slog. They get to the modern day, I actually liked that stuff.
Once they got past the highway, I was
I liked the highway stuff. I think I don't know if it was meant to be funny, but I laughed at it.
I was just reading before this that he originally did want to make a broad comedy.
Okay, so I think there were a couple spots of that survived that I thought were funny, and then I didn't know if it was intentional.
And the inspiration for this
Yeah, I was
came
just gonna get to that.
where he wanted to try crossing, for some reason, wanted to cross the Autobahn.
On foot, yes, and got stuck in the middle, much like that scene.
Right. What the hell is wrong with him?
But that, and that gave him the idea to basically make a film about what someone from the distant past would think of present day. And it was also inspired by, this is a quote from the director. Many New Zealanders going overseas for the first time are trusting and almost medieval in their outlook. So that was a bit of the inspiration.
Yeah, and talking about the modern time that they were in there, which is really, I guess, about a half hour's worth of the film, if not maybe 40 minutes. Probably about 40, 45 minutes. That is really the heart of this movie. That is the meat and potatoes there, because the parallels that they draw between us and medieval society. It's just wow. And he does it so subtly too. Like there's no, I don't feel like we were beaten over the head with
No, no,
that.
no. Well, like you said, the nuclear sub. And the bit where Griffin walks into the TV store.
Yeah, but he doesn't say why there's a nuclear sub
Well,
there.
it's true.
Or how a nuclear sub would be in a river.
Well, yeah. And just okay, this is I think the only thing I'm going to nitpick. They're on a boat with a horse.
Which they said was a really fucking hard shot to do.
Yeah, I actually wanted for the audience to know. We'll say the audience knows. I actually wanted the double Old Spice reference. I'm on a horse on a boat for the title this week. But so they've got a boat. They've got the horse on the boat in this little river, and the nuclear sub comes up. Wouldn't it have capsized the boat, particularly with a fucking horse on it?
Of course.
Only thing I'm gonna nitpick.
Dinghy versus that whole scene was just the height of absurdity. The fact, well, okay, you have the fact that there is a submarine in this very small, very shallow body of water. You have the fact that a dinghy goes up against a sub, and somehow the dinghy comes out intact in the end, and the sub just kind of, just drives away.
And he rides the horse o over the edge of the boat into water that is clearly over the horse's head.
Well, right, that's the thing. Later, yeah, he goes and rides the horse
How did the
when they're
horse not
coming
end up
back.
completely submerged?
Right. This body of water that wasn't deep to sink the horse entirely somehow had a nuclear sub in it.
But
So yeah,
that. Go ahead.
that scene's the height of absurdity. I love the TV store scene.
Okay, that was where it got a little heavy-handed for me.
I mean, it, just the way it was shot,
Oh, yeah, it was shot well.
and
You haven't
so
seen
much.
the second or third Matrix movies. It looked like there was a scene with the character called the Architect, which was actually looked like it was inspired by that scene. Had to have
Yeah,
been.
probably. I
Very
mean,
much reminded me of that, but of course this came first.
it was, yeah, definitely the most visually striking scene in this movie, and he spoke volumes without really saying all that much if you think about it. I mean, it was what, 2 minutes that he was in there?
Yeah, well, yeah, it wasn't long. It didn't get
No.
boring, but there's a talking head on one of the TVs that is basically talking about nuclear proliferation very directly.
And he's talking. It's just in the background. They're having dialogue in front of it when the other man comes
Oh.
in for him.
You know what? I think I listened more closely to that because it caught me as one of the lines we could have used for an intro. So I really paid attention to what was going on in the background there.
Well, right. And well, they also start talking about the plague of the 20th century, the AIDS virus,
Right.
which he's been disavowing the director or writer that, he didn't want this to be so much about it, but you draw the parallels.
Oh,
It's like,
yeah.
we're really, I mean, first you see medieval life and how shitty it is, but don't go thinking that we've got it so wonderfully here, because the first thing you see is the rabbit still fucking gets eaten by the bird, even in our time, that we found new ways to just kill each other en masse, and oh yeah, we have a plague of our own that we can't quite solve either.
See, you're actually, I think, talking me up on this one.
He
Because my
said
initial.
so much in like 2 minutes. And it was just in the background too. It wasn't even like the main thing going on. There was dialogue going on over
And
this.
it, well, that's the thing, is it wasn't just in the background there. It connected back to the beginning of the movie with the plague.
Right.
And I honestly didn't pick up on that at the time. Because my thought at the time was, The Gods Must Be Crazy did a much better job of showing what a primitive would think of modern society.
Yes, true.
But I didn't think about the whole, I mean, obviously the nuclear thing hit me over the head, but I didn't really connect
Yeah.
it to the plague and think about that aspect of it.
Yeah. So that scene alone, I was just, poof, all right. We perhaps we abandoned this too quickly. Then I was thinking, teenage Scotto still would have hated this anyway.
There's another scene I just want to touch on briefly because it was another I perhaps unintentionally, maybe intentionally if he was going for a broad comedy moment for me. When Connor ends up on the front of the train.
Oh yeah.
Connor somehow he's going through a rail yard and ends up he backs into a train and somehow gets attached to it. And then the train takes off.
Right.
And I mean it's a simple gag, but the actor's expression in this scene was hilarious.
Well, how they even do like the G-force thing to the
Yeah,
face.
well, big fan.
Yeah.
But I just loved how the actor played that part. And then of course they end up, going to put the cross on the spire. And then it gets weird.
Yeah.
And how much do we want to get into how weird it got?
Well, the whole. Well, I think everything up to the dream or past the dream. Because, yeah, that when they come back and it was just a dream. And I'm just. Yeah, there I was like. Phew.
Because I really liked it up until then, and then that just annoyed me.
That's one of the most annoying devices you can use. I mean,
And this was, I
what's
believe,
the TV
after.
show Dallas used
Exactly.
it?
And this was after Dallas used it, I think.
And
So and
then,
pretty much after Dallas, there was a moratorium put on that because that became
except
such a
for
laughing
one,
stock.
except for one bit, of
Well,
course,
Newhart, which was a total
Newhart,
play on
which
Dallas.
is genius.
Yeah. But I mean, for anybody using it seriously, stopped after Dallas because it became such a laughing stock.
Right, Dallas turned it into a cliche.
And I'm pretty sure this was after that. Granted,
Oh,
maybe they hadn't
definitely.
heard. But so to see that happen, it was just, it was a facepalm because it was so good up until then.
Right. However, it's a false
Kind of, yeah.
which then it was like, all right, I'm back in.
Well, basically, you find out that they think they've cured the plague by going to the future and making this offering. They haven't.
Right.
And
Which
I
I
don't.
guess shouldn't be much of a surprise,
No.
but we won't give anything away after that.
Yeah. The character that I thought was going to die much earlier, not well, it happened. Just not how I expected.
Right. So a lot of it just comes down to, romantic view versus reality in this. I think that's really what he's getting at for this entire movie. Because at this point, and this is why, we rented it as kids, we were huge into Dungeons and Dragons. So we were
Medieval
looking for
fantasy, right up your alley.
Some great like sword play like in 1988,
You want to talk to Slayer.
yeah, pretty much. Only, he gets he talk the Slayer, only a time traveling
Well,
Hawk the
yeah, with
Slayer.
time travel, right?
How awesome would that
Oh,
have been?
yeah.
Hawk
Best movie
finally.
ever. For if you're 16 in 88, best movie ever.
Yeah, we're just hoping for Hawk to get his hands on a machine gun and fucking figure
Right,
it out. And, all right, groovy.
right. So I think we're done.
Yeah,
I
that
don't think
movie, of
we can
course,
really
came
go much
years later,
further.
in the form of Army of Darkness.
Oh, of course. I don't think we can really go much further on this without giving away the ending.
Right.
So on to sequels and remakes. There haven't been any sequels or remakes. I don't think there are any plans, but I would love to see Gilliam get his hands on this property.
I don't know, like, oof. Yeah, it could use a big budget treatment.
Yeah. Better actors, better budget, clearer script.
And I think once I got through that first act of the movie, I was fine with the acting after that.
And think
Probably.
about the little comedic touches Gilliam would put into that beginning to make it easier.
Yeah. But I mean, the acting was bad in the first act. And maybe it didn't improve in the second or third act, but for some
It
reason,
got a lot more fun.
it was more fun and more tolerable, the
Yeah.
bad acting. Or maybe they did just get better throughout it. Who
Maybe.
knows?
I think they I think there was probably, well, actually, come to think of it, yes, there were fewer dialogue scenes in that section. It was basically turned into a comedic action movie.
Right.
So there was less talking one-on-one in the long dialogue, and so I think that's why it became more tolerable.
Another point of distraction, and this was in the first act also, more heavily than any other part, really. The soundtrack, the score. What was the deal with that?
See, I didn't notice the score except for the opening theme, which was interesting, a little odd.
Not as bad, but like when Connor returned to the village in the beginning,
The music didn't really strike me there.
it was like it pretty much was something straight from Mothra. In fact, when I wrote my
Wow.
notes, seriously, somewhere there's a 1960s monster movie
You
without a soundtrack.
mean like the big taiko drums and whatnot?
Well, yes.
Wow. I
When
didn't even notice it.
Connor returned to the village, I was looking for the little Japanese women, It's Connor! Because remember, they were like singing his name and stuff. It was weird. It really didn't make any
Well,
sense.
he's the big hero. He's I'm
The
trying to think of.
adventurer, yeah.
Yeah, there are plenty of examples in fantasy movies. I'm blanking at the moment, but he's that guy.
Yeah.
So everybody, loves and reveres him, and so that was why it was easy to get everybody else to follow the kid's vision, because it was his only hope, and everybody looked up to him. So
Yeah.
he said, "Well, we're gonna do it. They're gonna do it." All right, so on to brains.
On the brains.
I've actually spent most of the day trying to figure out what I was going to rate this thing.
This is a really hard one to do.
But ultimately, like I said, I think you talked me up on a bit of the parallels, and I think while it's certainly very flawed, it's a very interesting movie that I think people should see, so I'm going to go for.
Yeah, I'm really close there with you. I think if that first act were more tolerable, and one of my big worries was for a while it just seemed like we were watching a medieval Seinfeld, that it was just going to be a movie about nothing. And then when it got to the TV scene, I was just, wow. Oh my God.
I think it was the road cross. Actually, I think it was the scene with the metal workers that won me over.
Yeah,
There were some
that
great
was
gags in
good.
that scene.
There were some, although would we really medieval people really think our beer was that strong, you think?
Probably not.
Yeah, they probably have,
It'd
I mean,
probably be water to them.
right, 'cause back up until like maybe the 19th century, people just had beer for breakfast and
Yeah.
stuff.
I mean, it's still pretty much a soft drink in many parts of Europe.
Right, you know, it's not just something, oh, I just drink it to get hammered and stuff on the weekends. No, it's, oh, I woke up, I had like a big pint, oh, maybe 2 pints
Right.
before going to work, you know, have, you know. So anyway, for, you know, and then of course, there's just, I almost took an entire brain away from just the whole Only a Dream Wizard of Oz
Oh,
thing.
God, yes.
Because think about it, that was the Wizard of Oz thing too. It
It
was
was a
just a
definite
dream.
four for me up until then.
So yeah, I'm going with 3.5.
Okay. So, what have we learned?
It definitely did not live up to the worst movie ever made.
Now I learned that the white line's in the middle of the road. It's a dangerous place to walk.
Okay,
10 points if you get the reference. So, until next week when we will be reviewing Cannibal the Musical.
holy shit.
You've been waiting for this one. I've kind of been waiting for this one too.
It's like two in a row, back to back of movies
Yeah.
I've been waiting for us to do. Also, if you told me like 10 years ago that I'd want to see this movie again,
Yeah.
I would have said you're crazy.
Yeah,
But
yeah.
yeah, I wouldn't mind taking it again because there's a lot to take in.
So until then, go to zombietakeout.com, check out the album art, the episode description, of course the episode itself, which you're already listening to, links to find us on Facebook, Twitter, Google Plus, the movie list, where you can see everything that we've reviewed so far and everything that we're going to review in order up through the big bus, and the request a movie form, where you can request a movie for us to review. And of course, you can email us, zombietakeout@gmail.com, or leave us a voicemail at 414-368-ZTO1, or for the alphanumerically challenged,
They can go
414-368-9861.
fuck themselves.
Of course, always remember that you will always be calling from the middle of Milwaukee.
Yes, no matter where you're calling, you are always calling
From the middle of
from the middle of
Milwaukee.
Milwaukee.
Just a little hint of the reference. Until next week, always remember, never forget, wherever you go in life, there you
There you
are.
are.
Always too far in front of too far behind.
First story, Gary Oldman cast in the Robo. Gary Oldman cast in the RoboCop re take three. Gary Oldman cast in the RoboCop remake.
All right, now we're talking.